Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Acquisitions Anonymous, the internet's number one podcast on buying, selling, and operating small businesses. And this week is Masters Week. So if you just watched the Masters wrap up yesterday on Sunday, April 14th, we've got a fun deal for you. This is one of the largest ticket brokers of Masters tickets out there. We're based in Augusta, Georgia. We have some speculations to who it might be, but this business proved controversial among the hosts today. It's me and Heather. In Mills. One of us loves it, one of us hates it, and one is ambivalent on it. There are a couple different, it's kind of a few different businesses within a business. If you're curious about the ticket brokerage industry, this is an episode I think you'll really enjoy. So without further ado, here's this week's episode of Acquisitions Anonymous.
Have you thought about exiting your current online business or buying one to start a new journey as an entrepreneur, but you have no idea where to start? You can unlock business opportunities with Bupost.com. Bupost is the number one platform for buying and selling profitable online businesses and the first with built-in acquisition and financing for qualified buyers. At Bupost.com, you can source opportunities from Bupost exclusive listings, other marketplaces, or bring your own proprietary deal flow for approval. Bupost can offer pre-approved financing for recurring revenue businesses, allowing you to access fast funding with no personal guarantees. Do note, this is their biggest differentiator. So what do you need to sign up as a seller or buyer? Sellers, your business needs to meet these thresholds: 24 months operating your business, trailing 12 months revenue over 100K, and 18 plus months of track record. A buyer, you need to share your credit score if you're looking for financing, proof of funds, and sharing your LinkedIn profile. And that's it. Whether you're an entrepreneur looking for the right opportunity to acquire an established profitable business, or a founder looking to exit and sell your business at the right valuation with dedicated support, Bupost's expert M&A advisory team is on hand to help you through every stage of the process.
Want to find out more? Go to go.bupost.com/Michael Girdley, sign up and get qualified to sell your business or find your next deal.
All right, we got the trio here today on Acquisitions Anonymous, Heather and Mills. How are you guys doing?
Hey, Bill.
I'm good. Done with about 5 weeks of business travel. So I'm happy to be back in Southern California.
Heather,
sunny, it's actually sunny too.
Heather, I'm dying
to know. Weather.
What do you know now about ETA that you didn't 5 weeks ago?
Mostly the people that I get to talk to and some of the stories that I get from them. I don't think I learned anything new about ETA actually, but I did meet a lot of great people that, some of which I had already known just on the phone, but it's always great to connect with people in person. So we had a great time.
That's so cool.
And where did you go, Heather?
Gosh, I went to a conference in Scottsdale. Then I went to the BYU ETA conference. We sponsored that. Then we did, I did the Harvard ETA classroom, which I always love. Super interesting. Then we did the UCLA ETA event. That was here locally, but a long, long drive for us. And then ultimately New York for the Columbia ETA classroom. And also we hosted a meetup at the Axial headquarters. So we were super busy. We did a lot.
Heather, wow. You're home all star.
Yeah. Road warrior, for sure.
And for people listening, this is all for Heather's business, Viso Capital, who helps acquisition entrepreneurs connect with SBA loans. So that's why she put in the 5 weeks on the road.
That's right. Wasn't just for fun, although it was fun.
I bet. Which also means if you are listening to this and you are an entrepreneur who needs an SBA loan, Heather is your go-to. So you can drop her. I think you find her at visocap.net if you need an SBA loan.
Thank you. And we're super excited. We just launched some software for our folks to use, make modeling easier, and the whole lender Q&A portion of it easier. So we're super excited about all the efficiencies we're getting from that.
That is so cool.
Awesome. All right. Well, I don't have a cute segue from that to our deal today, but it is an interesting deal today. Mills, you brought this one to us.
Yeah, so this one caught my eyes. Website Closers, and it's a 35-year online ticket brokering company. And my first question was, how can you do online ticket brokerage for 35 years? But maybe they modified their business. But it's a secondary marketplace for concert, sporting event, and theater tickets. SBA pre-qualified, which is Heather's favorite, and have 80,000 affiliates, which is just nuts. So it says Website Closers presents 35-year-old ticket brokering business specializing in the secondary market for sought-after concerts, sporting events, theater seats, garnered a reputation of the highest caliber, built with a devoted clientele, and distinguished itself from rivals through honesty, transparency, exceptional customer support. The market in recent years, the demand for sporting events has surged. People are scrambling to find seats. I'm kind of summarizing as I go here, but basically supply and demand imbalance. People want tickets. They're hard to find, and this company helps you find them. So it says the company website displays between $2 and $3 billion worth of tickets at any given time. What's the big one in this space?
StubHub.
Like, that's what I feel like we're talking about right now, but maybe that's many multiples bigger.
About StubHub for sale on website closers.
Yeah. But I mean, it makes me think, right? I mean, what are they doing? Like 80 billion worth of tickets at any given time? Let's see. Most competitors mislead clients by hiding substantial fees, which I have heard people talk about, like the fees just, you know, death by 1,000 cuts. So they list tickets at their total all-inclusive price, and they built a reputation for good customer support. It says many consumers have called the company for nearly 36 years to gather information or advice about whether or not it's a good time to buy tickets. They are accessible daily via phone, text, messages, email, and live chat until 10 p.m. Sounds like a very on-demand business, you know, not quite 24/7, but close to it. The key value proposition of the business is that they are the only one offering travel agents a dedicated opportunity to earn a commission. The owners judiciously implemented an affiliate program for these professionals, whereby they each have a personalized website to send their clients to and receive a percentage of the sale. This has proven incredibly lucrative and contributed to over $2 million in revenue in 2023 alone. They have more than 80,000 affiliates, and they're adding approximately 100 a day. That's actually really impressive, because I think that this is probably just good old grassroots, like, business development. How do you get 80,000 travel agents? It's probably a lot of experimentation, but all right. The tickets are,
hold on. Are there 80,000 travel agents remaining in the world in 2024?
We need somebody to fact check this for us and let us know, because probably, right? I would think so, Bill, because you could have like a lot of stay at home moms who are also a travel agent on the side and like don't actually occupy an office, you know, 8 hours a day.
Yeah, that, well, for what it's worth, the National Bureau of Labor and Statistics, which is the top result in Google for this, says that that there are 50,000 people employed in this industry in the entire United States.
Somebody is lying. It's either the Bureau of Labor Statistics, BLS.gov, or website closers.
Yeah, and it's, I'm on BLS.gov right here. So I don't know.
I cannot wait for somebody to do a deep dive on this for us. All right, ticket sourcing. Tickets are procured in various ways. Primarily, inventory is shared to the website through an API with a prominent open ticket distribution platform that has over 1,000 other resellers uploading to them. They also buy stock purchase from season ticket holders for major sports leagues like MLB, NFL, NHL, and NBA. They also work with popular associates who have access to larger groups of tickets for major events like World Series and Super Bowl. They buy them through the general public. And Masters Golf Tournament, this is very appropriate. The Masters just ended. We're recording on Monday, and it just ended yesterday. We should have released this episode like a week ago. That would have been better. But Masters Golf Tournament badges are also acquired from patrons. Let's see. Their top seller is the Masters. Wow, this is getting better and better. Counts for 25% of sales and 35% of their net margins. Super Bowl follows popularity, contributing between 10 and 15% of annual revenue at 15% margins. $2 million is derived from sales for miscellaneous events, which presents tremendous growth potential. Yeah, I would say so. That would be how you want to grow this thing. They allocate a minimal budget to marketing, and the travel agent arm was developed through grassroots efforts to get the brand recognized in that industry. Let's see any other highlights here before I go on too long. Two full-time employees work in the capacities of data entry and bookkeeping, and a part-time member works in sales. So you basically have 2.5 full-time employees. Asking price is $7 million, cash flow of $1.1 million, and their revenue, or gross income, they call it, is just a little over $9 million. They've been around since 1989, four employees, including the seller, it sounds like. So they're asking, you know, a little under a 7x multiple. What do you guys think about this one?
Can you imagine how much the owner's hair must be on fire in this business? I mean, this guy is doing $9 million of revenue selling tickets to every event under the sun. It sounds like his personal cell phone number is like out there in the world for all the buyers, and he has functionally no help. Yikes. And he's been doing it, by the way, for 35 years. So this stuff is like absolutely second nature to him. Like I am picturing coming to this business and like your phone literally melting from all the notifications and you don't know what, and you're like drowning. This is terrifying to me.
Yeah. Well, and it's so incredible. Like this guy would be like the godfather of getting Masters tickets. You know, like 2 weeks ago, this guy was probably, he'd sold through all of his inventory and he's just ready to go like muck it up at the Masters. But you know, for the probably 2 or 3 months before the Masters, his hair is on fire because people are like, no, I'll pay you $10,000. No, I'll pay you $15,000. Like just hurling money at him to get passes.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, what's interesting about this business is it seems to, so in like my world, it seems like it's a combination of what I would call dropship and taking on inventory. So he said they're connected with a bunch of ticket marketplaces, including a major prominent open ticket distribution platform. So this is basically like a whole bunch of different ticket brokers sharing revenue. And then if somebody sells the ticket, it connects in the back end to the guy who actually has the ticket. And the guy who actually has the ticket sells the ticket to the customer, and the person who found the customer is making a commission, you know, along the way, and never actually takes possession of the ticket. Or does only minimally, or, you know, I'm sure it's all technically automated. So that's like functionally drop shipping. I would bet the margins are less on that part. But it says they also have this bit where stock is purchased from season ticket holders and the Masters badges are acquired from patrons and all that stuff, where it seems like there is capital at risk here, which this is like running, you know, a fruit business where all your stuff has an expiration date of a couple months. And if you hold it too long, it goes to zero. So the level of sophistication to hold inventory in the tickets business is so much higher than it is to broker tickets in the ticket business. So that to me is right where I would go to on the diligence, is how much capital do I have to have at risk at any one time and as far as inventory? What are my margins like when I do risk my own capital versus what are my margins like, you know, when I don't, when I use the brokers? I imagine the only way he's gotten access to this many Masters tickets is through risking his own capital. I just didn't understand that right away.
Yeah. And a lender would too. I mean, it, what they're doing effectively from a lender's perspective is speculating on those tickets. You know, like you said, they have a finite life, and he's got to know, or this owner has got to know what price to pay for them. That's really huge because they've got to have a sense of how much they can sell them for. And they might have to sell some at a loss sometimes. I'm sure it's happened. You know, I'm sure this is the kind of business where you can go back and kind of dig through the historicals and find out that sometimes they weren't buying at the right price and they had to sell at a loss. So I think that it's basically like speculating in a sense. I think that's really tough for at least an SBA lender to underwrite something like that.
Well, I think it's also hard because you're exactly right. You're speculating. Like, you probably make your money on the buy, right? You get a good deal on these tickets and you kind of know what they're worth, and you're going to make money on the spread. Transferring that knowledge, like, do you know what, you know, I don't know, Bruce Springsteen goes for in Minneapolis versus what the Rolling Stones go for in Tampa? You know, the amount of, you know, tribal knowledge there. And the other thing is you are competing against technology. Is 2024. You're competing against technology and AI that knows how to price this stuff to perfection. So I'd imagine like this is essentially trying to compete against high frequency traders. Like you try to play against StubHub in this market, you're going to lose. You know, they know exactly what it's worth. And if you're paying more than them, you're probably wrong. Unless though, this guy, like now where the alpha would be is, does this guy have a hookup at the Masters, and how is he, you know, that no one else can touch? But then the question is, does that transfer to you? Or is it this guy? Is this guy member at Augusta National or, you know, who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. That part of the business is kind of scary to me. Go ahead, Mills.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, Augusta National is ruthless. I mean, people get escorted out and said they can never come back again if you run at the course.
Yeah.
As a person who's there. I just put this thing in the chat, though, you guys, that's from the Augusta Press. And I don't know if this is the guy or not, but this is what I'm picturing. This guy's name is Jimmy D. And he sells tickets. Bill's going to pull it up for people who are on YouTube. But Jimmy D sets up on Washington Road in Augusta and has been reselling tickets for the Masters for 30 years out there. He lives in Miami and he comes to town for this. If this isn't the guy, this is his twin. I mean, this is the same thing almost, except obviously the business we're talking about is much more online. This guy is, you know, a little bit more boots on the ground. He sets up a tent in like a motel parking lot that they let him rent space. It seems like there's some ambiguity. What I'm getting, and I know people who know a lot more about this because Augusta is an hour away from us, and a lot of people come to stay in Columbia because there's better just accommodations and food and stuff like that. But like, this is a very gray area. I think that, you know, Augusta National is just ruthless. And so this is 25% of your business and 35% of your net income that, you know, could go away overnight if they decide that they want to actually enforce some of this.
Okay.
Yeah. It used to be called ticket scalping when I was young.
Yes. Yep.
Now it's called ticket brokering. Yeah. It's brokering. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. The part about the business that looked interesting to me, like the Masters part looks really scary for all the reasons we just mentioned. The part that looked interesting was the travel agents, even though they may have overestimated how many there are. I've looked at a business before that was around marathon running and travel. They kind of blended the two. So if you wanted to run a race, but you wanted to also combine it with travel, go somewhere cool to run the race, they helped you kind of plan that out. And they were actually looking at acquiring a more travel agency kind of business to kind of blend the two even more. So I think there's a trend towards, you know, combining travel with events more than just regular tourism that I think this company is taking advantage of in some way. That's interesting to me. I'd want to learn more about that.
Yeah. I mean, they said it's doing about $2 million of revenue comes from the travel agent or the affiliate side. I mean, first thing I'm doing is diligencing whether these affiliates are actually travel agents or whether it's a bunch of Google AdWords arbitragers. But if that business is growing fast, I mean, this again comes back to staffing this business. He's got like minimal help and he has somehow built up a system that is generating 100 new leads a day for affiliates. And he's built it to $2 million a year of revenue of the nine that he has. So this is, you know, a good 25% of his business is this affiliate side. You know, I think what you've got here is like several businesses in one that you have to diligence separate. You have the Masters business, you have the affiliates business, you have the API, like drop what I call the drop ship business. And then you've also got the balance sheet intensive speculation business where you're making tickets onto your balance sheet. So I see four businesses in one here that you have to diligence and understand separately.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah. And since the bulk of the 1.1 really is the Masters, that's what you're paying for in the price. And it seems a little rich.
This is ripe for some sort of revenue share apprenticeship. I mean, like what you should do is go work for this dude for 2 years,
Learn
the tricks of the trade and gradually buy into the business. You can't just cannonball into this on day one and hope Jimmy D calls you back when you want to know what the accurate price for the Suns versus Clippers is, you know.
I think what you hope, right, and I'm not so naive to think this, is that you get more info on this business and you realize there actually is a website and like there is some back end that is doing most of this. But I would give that like a less than 5% chance. You know, I think it is mostly this guy. And when you meet, I mean, I bought tickets one time for my wife's uncle in Charlottesville, this uncle that I've told you about. And he's like, oh, yeah, just meet my ticket guy. Call him when you're on the way up here to go to like the Hornets or whatever. And I call the guy And he's like, yeah, just meet me at this exit. Get off the exit on, you know, the off ramp. Go straight across and meet me on the on ramp, and I'll be parked in my Buick LeSabre, you know, and I'll just hand you the tickets. Like, this is the world, you know, that these guys operate in, and they are just so, you're right. They have so much institutional knowledge about, like, hey, 2 weeks out, the ticket is worth this, but they're doing, like, you know, a beautiful mind kind of stuff in their head. Oh, 1 week out, it's worth this, but they have all these events, all the different pricing dynamics. Oh, all of a sudden there's rain in the forecast. The whole pricing model changes. Like, they do all that just instantaneously.
Yes. I mean, this is the classic, I think Brent Beasher calls it the hustler with help, right? Like, the classic, like, this guy is a hustler and he's got a couple part-time remote people doing data entry, customer service, et cetera. And this guy, I mean, bless him, has willed a $9 million revenue, $1.1 million EBITDA business into existence, kept it that way for 30 years. I'm sure he has done well. It's just so hard to transfer these things. This is like a perfect example. You know, everybody talks about the silver tsunami and, like, all these businesses have to transfer over the next couple decades. This is a perfect example of why I think the silver tsunami argument is overblown.
Yes, you're just so right.
So, like, this guy is right there in all of those numbers. Every metric you see about small business owners, and he's got a couple employees, he's got 9 million in revenue, he's got a million plus of EBITDA. And, like, if you don't know anything about the business and you just look at the income statement, you go, this is one of those silver tsunami businesses some searcher is going to buy. And then you learn about it and you go, there might not be any enterprise value here at all. Like, I don't know if this is transferable. Just considering the guy, he's hustling with help. The only way you'd do that, like, there's no debt on this thing. I mean, you would be insane to borrow money to buy this, but you would, like, you've got to do some sort of apprenticeship takeover. But that's really hard because he doesn't have anyone in the business that can do that. So you got to come in cold, you know, say, I'm going to do a couple years of my life. He's got to trust you to do that. It's got to work out. You know, these things are tough to transfer. They really are.
All right. Bull case. You go ahead.
Yeah, well, they are advertising SBA pre-qualified, as you know, one of my favorite things. And you just said it. This probably shouldn't have any debt on it because it's a really scary transfer. Even if you were to get an SBA loan, they're asking $7 million. You can't afford more than about 3.7 turns of EBITDA on an SBA basis these days, or you won't have enough DSCR, debt service coverage ratio. That's about $4 million here, and they're asking $7 million. So someone wants to come along and put $3 million of equity if they were to pay this price. You know, so it makes you kind of question, what sort of pre-qualification is that? That's not really anything. and I doubt that the lender really spent any time thinking about, is this business really transferable? But their underwriter sure will. If they ever, you know, if you get this under LOI, you go into a loan process, the next group of people in the bank is going to start asking those questions, and it's probably going to be a no on the financing.
Heather, is this one of those, like, blacklisted businesses too? Like, I know that there's just a certain, you know, sets of categories. Like, it can't be, you know, vice businesses. It can't be, like, payday lending. It can't be any money lending, right? Would this be one of those categories? Ticket brokering or something like that?
It feels like it's in the gray area because they speculate. There is a rule, like, against businesses that speculate, like a real estate developer, that speculation, that's not allowed. Sure. I would think it's kind of in a gray area. You could argue both ways a little bit here, but, once a lender really understood what they're doing and it's such a big percentage of sales, I think whether eligible or not, most lenders would just not want to lend here. It's too risky.
Yeah.
And there could be, to, you know, to your point, how does he pay for that stock, that inventory? Is he using a line of credit? Now, I've seen a few businesses, I've talked to a few people lately where I said it's not transferable primarily because you're never going to get that specialty line of credit that the seller has. You know, that I've seen some deals where a seller was doing some equipment rental and it was like equipment rental basically. And he used a line of credit to buy the equipment and to hold it. A new buyer to that business never going to qualify for a line of credit like that. That lender's not going to do it. So I always look for, if there's specialty financing required, that's really kind of unique, that's probably not a transferable business. The new buyer's not going to get it, especially if they're going to be putting SBA type leverage on the balance sheet at the same time. The other lender is just not going to want to deal with a new person and more leverage on the balance sheet.
All right. Bold case on this.
All right.
Because I actually kind of like this. Is
all right. Let's hear it.
At a reasonable price. Okay. That's the huge caveat at the beginning. At a reasonable price, you basically work 1 month out of the year doing the master's, which people like, there's professionals in every industry who would fall all over themselves to be the guy holding all the cards when it comes to master's tickets. Like, that would be incredibly valuable in a few different ways. But you basically streamline this business down to maybe travel agents. You're no longer the hustler with the cell phone. You're just plugging travel agents into this ticket sharing API, and you're just borrowing somebody else's back end. And you do the master's 1 month out of the year. And maybe your revenue goes to half, right? You get 25% of the revenue, which, you know, give or take, let's just say it's about $2.5 million in revenue from the master's. And then, you know, another $2 million and growing on the, you know, travel agent referral. And then anything else that you just point to the API is incidental, but you're not the guy who's just constantly answering his phone and hustling in his head. And at a reasonable price, you're probably working like maybe 2 months out of the year.
As a small, maybe you can split the business up, Mills. Maybe you can take all the other stuff that's not what you described, sell it off at a reasonable price, and just ride into the sunset as the master's guy until you die.
Or, I mean, worst case, you just shutter it, right? I mean, you would have to basically due diligence this with this seller and say, this is the only part that is viable. And so there's a reflection of that in the purchase price. There's a lot of volatility around making this transition. I'm your guy. You know, I will be here and I will ride shotgun with you as we navigate this transition. And you've got to compensate me for the risk that I'm taking with a reduction in purchase price. But this is the best possible path to you getting any liquidity from this thing if you ever want to like have your phone separated.
Yeah.
I think that would be super fun. If I was unemployed right now, oh, totally.
I'm going to be on the pizza boat in the Caribbean and you're going to be on the side of the road in Augusta, Georgia, selling master's tickets.
Yeah, you got it.
But there's got to be, I mean, to your point though, Mills, right? Like there's got to be a successor of this thing somewhere, like somebody who is wired in with the golf club and loves the masters and wants to live in Augusta and do this thing, to your point, a couple months a year. Like there's got to be somebody he can bring in to apprentice and hand this thing down to.
I think the big risk is like I found another article earlier about this where Augusta National sent a letter to a season ticket holder, which they closed. I think there's some crazy thing like they closed the you can get in the lottery and win them. But like for the actual annual passes, they closed it in like 1978. The waitlist was so long. You just can't get in. You have to get in the lottery, and I think it's a, you know, 1 in 200 chance every year or something like that for just the regular tickets, season tickets for a day. But there was this article where Augusta National had sent this letter to somebody and said, hey, we became aware that you were selling your tickets through a third party, and you're off the list now, and you can't come back, and we're going to refund you $150.
Oh,
because the base value of the tickets, like the actual sticker price, is not that. I mean, Augusta National makes almost all of their money on the TV rights. That's where the bulk of it is. It's not on the, you know, pimento cheese and egg salad sandwiches.
Yep.
So what you're saying, though, is that this business kind of operates on violating the rules, at least for the ticket holders who are selling the tickets. So, I mean,
I don't know. I think it is figure outable. But I think it is probably in a gray area. But I think there's enough things like this that Augusta National knows, right? Somebody has to buy and sell these tickets. There's another rule that I saw just in the quick Googling while we've been recording is that you can't buy and sell them within 2,700 feet of the entrance because they don't want it to be that typical like thing where, you know, people are just holding tickets up in the air because it dilutes the perceived value.
Interesting. All right, so there's two businesses here. There's the master's business and the Rolex Four businesses. But let's simplify it to the master's business and the ticket brokerage and speculation business. Do you think the master business, we agree, you need an apprentice or something like this. You know, does the ticket brokerage business trade? You know, maybe not with debt, but you think this is viable?
Makes you wonder why a bigger player hasn't done this. Like, do they need it? Does it actually take away from them? If StubHub owns all of the kind of back end and inventory, and if they own the marketplace, do they need this? This is just a referral source, and they might cut out a little bit of like revenue share. Probably not.
Yeah, I wonder, like, maybe it's just, I don't want to call it a bottom feeder because that's not fair, but it's like an eddy feeder. You know, like maybe they've got carved out some type of SEO. They've figured out they've got a niche of buyers that got good prices on this website at one point, and so keeps checking it. You know, so and these businesses exist in the eddy feeders exist in every industry, right? And the behemoths just don't notice them because the StubHub is like, we're numbers 1, 2, and 4 on Google, and these guys are 3, and some other small fish is 6, and mm-hmm. you know, and you just don't worry about it as StubHub because StubHub's like, they can't allocate an intern to steal this guy's $9 million worth of revenue. he lives in the eddy and he has a nice business. But the thing about eddy feeder businesses, though, is they can be very hard to grow because you rent smack at StubHub. And it's not that StubHub squashes you. It's just like you run into StubHub and bounce off.
Yeah.
You know, like you can't outrank, you can't move from number 4 on Google to number 3 because you'll never outrank StubHub. You can't ever get, you know, more than a certain number of critical mass of tickets because StubHub owns the market and that people just go there and they price better. And, you know, so a lot of times the eddy feeders can be really good small businesses, but it's really tough to create a growth thesis for them.
Yeah. And you're not even big enough to be in their crosshairs. Like, you're the fly, you know, that's buzzing around their ass. And, you know, they're just like, we didn't even know you were there.
Correct. So at the end of this episode, we're going to give thumbs up, thumbs down. Are you getting the book on this business, or are you moving on to the next one? Heather, we'll start with you.
Of course, the lender is going to say thumbs down.
It's illegal. It's you know, the SBA won't qualify it. You know, I don't want to go sit in the heat in Augusta.
No, definitely not.
Heather's out. Heather's out, retiring to the worm farm.
Yeah.
Out. Mills, in or out?
Two thumbs in, man. I can't wait to get the book on this. I'm dying to know. If it's Jimmy D, I'm going to look him up.
All right. Mills is in. So if you stop hearing Mills on the podcast, it is because he is on the side of the road in Augusta, Georgia, no closer than 2,700 feet to Augusta National,
yeah,
slaying tickets with Jimmy D.
Hey, and you know what? Bill, the podcast is going to be a huge referral source because you know who wants tickets to Augusta National? Everybody. And I'm going to be there.
That's right. And you know, we can afford them, small business owners who listen to this podcast. So Jimmy D, if you'd like to sponsor the podcast, you know where to find us. and for me, I am out on this one. Too hard pile for me. Just too hard pile.
Yeah.
Very interesting business, but I'm out on the too hard pile. All right. Well, that wraps up another episode of Acquisitions Anonymous. So here is what y'all can do if you listen, if you like our friendly banter about M&A deals. Here's what you need to help. Tell a friend about our podcast, someone that's interested in small business. You can follow us on Twitter and on YouTube, our main platforms. And if you are out there and you need an SBA loan, Heather is your go-to. So drop Heather an email at bizocap.net. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of Acquisitions Anonymous.